91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour, we're in our at-your-service mode about South Florida gardening. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We have a master gardener and a Broward County urban horticulture agent in the studio. And, of course, we'll be taking your calls. Hear the latest about community gardens, organic vegetables, smart pest control, and Florida-friendly landscapes. They can be sustainable and low maintenance. Perhaps you'd like to make your property butterfly-friendly with nectar plants or grow veggies in a small outdoor space. Next, Dr. John Pipoli and Terry Goldsmith on hand for your questions. First, NPR and regional news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman has the day off. In the next hour, we're at your service about South Florida gardening. If you've tended garden up north in the past, you'll need to adapt to South Florida's subtropical seasons. And we have lots of info with us today, and taking your calls is Dr. John Pipoli. He's an urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent with the University of Florida and Broward County. Welcome to you, Dr. John.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm really happy to be here.
Also with us is Terry Goldsmith. She's the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. Welcome to you, Terry.
Thank you to be here. Good to be here.
So are you ready for some phone calls?
Oh, yes.
Bring it on.
Always ready.
Let me give out the number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-9576. And also email, if you'd like, radio@wlrn.org. radio@wlrn.org. Dr. John Pipoli, explain how our subtropical climate affects everyone's gardening efforts here.
Well, I think the first thing that you have to understand is because we don't have a winter, we have insects, pests, and fungi, and other things that attack plants 24/7, 365 days a year. So no rest for the wicked.
Rarely is it kind of cleaned up with a frost.
Yeah, just once in a while, and for there are some limited plants, sort of the northern limit, just below the lake, that respond to a slight freeze. But the rest of the plants don't like it and don't do very well.
And Terry Goldsmith, tell us exactly what a Florida Master Gardener is.
A Florida
Master. And also how it is special in Broward County.
Well, a Florida Master Gardener, Broward County, is trained by Dr. Pipoli, my mentor. And we start out as a steward of the environment first, and then he teaches us about gardening second. That's really how it works, because being a master gardener is about encompassing all things having to do with the environment here in Broward, or in all of the South Florida. And the cool thing about us is we have a staff of volunteers that are available electronically. That means that you can take your smartphone picture of a pest or a plant or a weed or a brown patch in your turf and send it to us and give us some information, and we can help you diagnose it scientifically and free of charge.
What about soil samples, Doctor? Do you accept those and analyze people's soil for alkalinity?
Well, right now there's a big problem because the pH above 7.4, which is alkaline soil, there are not a lot of labs available to deal with that. There are only two in the state, and if you write to mastergardener@broward.org, we'll send them to you. Overall, statewide, soil samples from our area, from Broward, Miami-Dade, and County South, Monroe, comprise less than about a tenth of 1%, so most of the labs don't spend the money to have another protocol that's necessary. However, those two firms work with the Commonwealth Agricultural and Commonwealth Forestry Institute, so in the Anglophone countries in the Caribbean, which have serpentine soil, very, very basic, they work there, so they can handle our soils very well.
What would be an average pH for someone's backyard or something?
If you're not in extreme western Dade or Broward, your pH could be 7.5 to 8 easily.
Isn't the short answer just bad?
Yeah,
it's bad dirt. We don't test our soil a lot. We know it's bad.
There's one other thing to take in consideration, and that is, for a lot of purposes, tomatoes, vegetables, we prefer that people use bags just because there's so many contaminants that stay in the soil so long here. Maybe bags on top of beds or in raised beds, and that way you're not going to have any contaminated soil with nasty things, metals and other kinds of things. So testing your soils of sort of less importance because they're patchy, you know, we're on fill. So depending on where your house happens to be, you might have clay in the middle of your yard or something strange 3 feet away from the thing you just tested. So it's safer. Right. Yeah, it's safer just to use alternate methods, so to speak.
What's the best way, Terry Goldsmith, for a novice to begin gardening here in South Florida?
Well, you got to start off with a clean slate, because anything I learned from living in the Midwest was absolutely the exact opposite of what you should be doing down here. And as the environment changes, the needs of the plants in your yard change, and it also depends on how much time you've got to devote to it. I run a business. I'm full-time, like a lot of the master gardeners. So I think the best way to start is maybe even container gardening isn't a bad way to go. You can create a biosphere of your own, even if you only have a balcony or a small backyard, and you want to start out slow before you keep going. And then what happens is the more you cultivate, the more joy it brings you. And what happened to me was I work from home when I'm not traveling, and now I spend all my time on the phone in the backyard walking around.
Keeping in the vegetable and herb realm now, soon it'll be June 1st, what could people plant now?
Well, this time of year is a little problem.
It's tough.
Theoretically, you can do cassava, which is not really nutritive, but has cultural value. Chayote, which is a little green member of the pumpkin family, a kind of a squash, Central American in origin. Cherry tomatoes will do okay, but you're going to have to really watch them because it's easy for them to get too much water and get some fungal diseases. Chinese yams.
Sweet potatoes good, right?
Sweet potatoes will do fine. Pigeon peas will do just fine. And the nice thing with pigeon peas is if it rains too much and you don't get good pollination, you can turn over those plants and they'll be green manure for your garden. So that's a really safe thing to plant. Pumpkins you can always run, although they take a lot of space. And I think that's about the realm right now, because we're about to enter a very tough time to grow things. We do tell people that if you're going to plant a big garden in the fall, now's the time to put clear plastic over the soil and solarize. Let the sun cook.
The heat.
Yes, let your sun cook your soil and all the nematodes and other bad things will run away with no chemicals.
And what do the nematodes do?
The nematodes infest the roots and make them look as if they're rheumatoid arthritic. And it cripples the plant, so the plant dies a premature death or has extremely poor fruit production.
Well, we have plenty of phone calls, plenty of email. Our first one is from Roseanne. This is a common problem. I've had it. Could you please ask if they have any tips about keeping basil alive in South Florida? Every plant I've gotten usually gets a black spot in the middle of the leaves, and the stems begin to shrivel.
That's powdery mildew, and most of the time the problem with that is it's too humid where it is. So first you have to sort of semi-shade basil because it'll really wilt quickly in the sun, but people usually overshade it, and then it's in an atmosphere that's too moist, and it's susceptible to fungal infections, and that happens a lot. So the secret is mottled sun, if you want to call it that, partial sun, partial shade.
But air to the side of the sun, then.
Yes, and minimal watering. Don't water it until it starts to look like it's going to wilt, because otherwise people kill it with kindness is usually what happens.
What if you wanted to bring it indoors, John?
That would be even fine, as long as you have like a south window, so it would get enough light.
Because it grows very fast.
Yeah, yeah. People usually kill it with kindness is sort of the bottom line.
It's a good herb to start because it's probably the most common cooking herb.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's not the most difficult one to cook is cilantro. You have to be a real pro to do that, right?
To grow it?
To grow it and have it last for a long time. You can do culantro.
It's actually a parsley, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's susceptible to a lot of little pests that knock off the top of it, and that's a problem.
Okay, and let's take some phone calls. First up, it's Ian in Miami. Hi there.
Hi. So I'm a certified arborist with Fruit Tree Service, and one of the most common requests we get for replanting is something that will provide a screen. And traditionally, it was Ficus benjamina and Pelusia rosea, and options that I've never really been fond of because of how overused they are and how little they provide for the local ecosystem. So I was wondering if you could provide some options, some native options for hedge or screen material around borders of people's yards.
Well, we actually put out a publication that we can send out to you in the PDF form that would give you all the different shrubs. We have a recommended list of perimeter plantings, among which are the stopper families, for example. The white stopper, the red stopper, Simpson stoppers are all really, really good choices for that. And I'm just trying to think what other, like Podocarpus is another one that I think we recommend.
Yeah, white pigeonberry is fantastic. The list is nice because first there are two parts to it. One tells you how to take care of your hedge. Your hedge needs to be wider at the base than at the top, which is the opposite of
That's
what everyone
for sunlight.
Does. Yeah, right. It's for sunlight, right? And then the second thing is we have it arranged by height from tallest screens all the way to border plantings, which are less than
right.
12 inches. So if you go to... I guess you'd go to broward.org/parks, and then there's a link there to our main page for urban horticulture, and we have Florida-friendly shrubs for perimeter plantings, the lecture, and the list. And there you'll find approximately 200 choices, I think it is.
Yeah, and you know, because of the line of work that you're in, anytime that you have a question on behalf of a customer and they're looking for some advice on something like that, you know, mastergardener@broward.org, just send a picture. Or ask a question, and we can get you the information you need.
Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. We're talking about gardens today, South Florida style, and it's Topical Currents at Your Service with Terry Goldsmith and Dr. John Pipeley. We'll be right back after this break. And it is today's Topical Currents at Your Service edition. Our topic is gardening with Dr. John Pipeley. He's an urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent with the University of Florida and Broward County. And also Terry Goldsmith. She's the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. Let's go quickly back to the phones. Larry in Boynton Beach. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate the topic, and you're talking about this because it's a really big thing, and I think things have gotten, a little worse, and maybe you can correct me if my perception is wrong. I've been doing a lot of gardening, mostly vegetables and herbs, for a few years now, and I find that now the problem seems to be worse than it ever has been. The decimation caused by... I think this connection of events, the white flies and the ants and the snails, and then the other bane of my existence is now mold. So is there anything that I can do to help control those? Because they all seem to be more of a problem this year, this time of year, than I ever have encountered in the past.
Well, I can tell you, if you're having problems with mold, it means you don't have proper air circulation.
No, I'm sorry, not mold.
Mold.
M-O-L-E.
Oh, mold.
M-O-L-E.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a big deal.
What do you do with mold?
Yeah, there are a number of things. You can go to edis.ifas.ufl.edu and put mold as the keyword, and it'll give you a little paper that tells you how you can basically chase a mole out of their little holes, you know, and get them out of your yard.
Instead of that alphabet soup.
Oh, yes.
How about something they can Google?
You could
mold,
Google
University of Florida.
You could go to University of Florida. Yeah,
you EDIS comes up too, John.
Yeah,
you
that's
just put
right.
It, you just put EDIS, Edward David Iris Sam, in your Google browser,
right.
The internet browser. It'll come up. It'll pop right up, and then you just type in moles.
Right.
Ah, okay. So, I mean, will it give more? Because I know the usual, some kind of stomper, something to make a high frequency. I mean, nothing has worked.
Well, they have several articles in there, and it's the latest that they work with. There are several faculty at the University of Florida that strictly are dedicated to nuisance wildlife, so that's going to be the best
okay.
we know about right now anyway.
The other three issues, I would just say one of the things we parked on our the Broward Parks, Broward.org Parks page was a home remedies for insect and disease control. And I can tell you the three other things that you mentioned, I have been successful in eradicating using our homemade stuff. It deals with fungus, it deals with insects, it deals with aphids, a majority of the things that will afflict. And although it does seem worse, I think it's just because it's constant. It goes from one pest to the next. I find that if I'm diligent with my little spray bottle and my little soap and vinegar and baking soda and salt, that it works out.
Vinegar, baking soda, and salt.
Yeah, I put together, and it's again, it's on our website, and of course you can always email us at mastergardener@broward.org, but we have a homemade recipe for, and I use Epsom salt because it's actually a bit of a beneficial for the plants as well.
Yeah, the magnesium.
Right, and that's right. And then also a little baking soda, and I use a soap, an actual soap, as a bonding agent just to keep it on. And and vinegar.
Soap? What kind of soap?
I use a Dr. Bronner's because it's soap. It's not detergent.
But what about so you don't want ivory liquid?
As long as it's a soap and not a detergent. So you want to say from dishwashing soap. But I guess an ivory soap on a bar would work, right?
Yeah, that would be good. The only problem is the last time I went to the grocery store, ivory now is made in Canada and has the French translation says that there's a detergent in it. The English translation says it's a pure soap. So I have to.
Good gravy.
I've written to ivory. I'm waiting for the answer.
So in the meantime, Dr. Bronner's, yes. You can get it around. Yeah. Most of the supermarkets.
The reason why we say that really important is that, remember, a detergent emulsifies fat, so it will actually strip the leaf of wax,
right.
And it'll kill the leaf. That's the reason why it has to be true soap and not a detergent.
Let's turn quickly to landscapes or flowers, if you will. What's a good perennial flowering plant that people can use here in South Florida that's easy to care for?
And all those things that are on our perimeter shrub list can be used individually, and they're really nice. White pigeonberry is fantastic. All the stoppers are great.
I mean, highly ornamental, naturally. You can't go wrong with a hibiscus.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're always promoting plants that are also that are beautiful and also Florida-friendly. Because if you stay inside the principles of Florida-friendly landscaping, you cannot go wrong. You'll save a ton of money by not putting plants in the wrong place or buying the wrong plant.
What about native plants that
right.
you can landscape?
Yeah, those are all natives that I told you
about. What
are the
top ones?
The top ones are the stoppers more than any other.
But flowering, what would be a flowering?
Flowering.
Heavy
but
flowering.
They have flowers, but big flowers... Orange Geiger, if you can
passion flowers, nice, right?
Passion flowers are really good.
That's a good one.
Let's see right offhand. Big flowers.
Well, you know, even though it's not native, there's nothing wrong with a bougainvillea.
They're
Florida friendly. They're just not a native plant. There are some that don't go wild. It's the invasives you worry about.
Yeah, more than anything
else.
Because
they take a lot of pruning, don't they?
No, it's just memorable.
Yes.
It's just memorable pruning. It's the same as everything.
You know,
else.
Some things are attractive by their leaves. You know, you can plant a satin leaf, which is rusty brown on the top, on the bottom, and nice green on the top, or a silver buttonwood, which is
nice
as well. And that way, year round, you have some color.
Yeah.
Next caller, we've got Felix. He's in Delray Beach. Hi, Felix. Felix, you're up. We'll move along to Jen in Miami. Hi. Hello, Jen.
Yeah, hi.
There we go.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a few mango trees in my garden, and this year they're not producing as much as they have in the past. And I'm having a problem with squirrels getting to the few that I have before I do, and even before they've ripened. And I wondered if you had any good method of deterring them.
How tall are they?
Not so tall, maybe 10 feet.
Oh, there's still time then. Before they get so tall that you can't reach the fruit anymore, right? I've actually seen the clear plastic clamshell vegetable packages that you get your tomatoes in. People put that around the fruit and it keeps them out.
Yeah, and the other thing is if the squirrels are not jumping on top of them, they're coming up from the bottom, you take an old bucket and leave one side intact and cut the other two sides and make a hole in it and then put it around the trunk. That also deters...
Oh, how clever. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
that's a new one.
We invented it when I was at Fairchild. They
cool.
crawl up and they can't get around the bucket and they can't get over
that
it either.
It must be fun to watch, too.
It stops iguanas dead in their tracks.
Oh, that's really good.
It's called the upside-down bucket trick.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right.
Okay, thanks for your call. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. We have a few lines open. Let's see. Let's turn to composting. We have an emailer here. Is there anything different we need to do in South Florida when composting? How about composting basics first?
The most important thing in your compost pile is that you rotate it frequently so there's oxygen in there. Otherwise, you're going to get bacterial buildup and consequent sulfur production, and it's going to smell terrible, and your neighbors will complain. And your
and no meats or meat fat in there.
None right. at all. No. No, just remember, it has to the and if it's any waste product from an animal, the animal has to be a vegetarian.
Right.
So plants go to plants, and if you remember that, you will never go wrong. And the other thing to do too is try to keep it as acidic as possible. You know, if it isn't going quite the way you expected, throw some pine needles in there. And that'll help a lot. But do not use anything basic. No eggshells for any reason. Because remember, we're already alkaline. Your water in Miami-Dade can be almost 10 in some neighborhoods. So the pH is way, way high. So you want to try to do everything you can to get a nice acidic compost to put down and mix in with the soil.
So it can be grass cuttings, leaves, and vegetable trimmings.
Right, and vegetable trimmings. Well, no, you can have little branches that you can put in there too, and you can put some horse manure or you know, some rabbit manure. If you can get some bat guano, that'll give you a supercharge.
Well, we'll work on that one.
Yes. You can actually buy it online, you know.
Should it be warm to the touch?
Yeah, 120 degrees. 120, 140 is great.
Now, what if they don't? What for people who aren't going to be using a thermometer to stick the.
When you put your hand in it, if it's as warm as your oatmeal, that's fine.
There you go. Okay. That's what I do.
Yeah.
And then when do you know when it's usable?
Once you have a liquid that comes out of it, that it's making its own little tea that's coming out, then you're all set. The easiest thing to do is get one of these barrels that you turn.
It's also the nicest way because it doesn't smell. And
yeah.
you won't get anything dirty.
You can use on your house plants?
Oh, absolutely.
It's fantastic stuff.
Oh, it's instant, and you can't burn anything with it either, so it's really good.
Okay, back to our calls. We've got Glenn. He's in Hollywood. Hey there. Glenn, you're serenading us.
Yes. Hello?
Hello. How are you?
Good. I had a problem. I've tried for years to grow plants inside my condominium, and I've done everything, use potting soil, plant food, but they all die. And so the last one that was dying, I said, well, let me just put it outside. And I put it outside, and it's fine. So I was wondering, is there something is toxic in my condominium that's killing the plants?
I've had trouble only with drafts in my house. It's amazing what an air conditioning vent will do to a plant. I had a plant that was happy for like 6 years, 7 years, and the minute the air conditioning vent was pried open by a cleaning person, all of a sudden it started to look really bad. So what temperature do you keep your apartment at?
To be honest with you, I rarely use the air conditioner.
There goes that theory.
I like fresh air, so unless it's really hot, I don't put the air conditioner. I can leave the windows open. Well, I don't know if there's something I had the exterminator was here, I don't know, years ago, and I don't know if it's from the exterminator, you know, what they did.
No, I doubt it. I think what's happening is it's too moist right around where he had the plants, and it's probably a fungus got him, sounds like to me.
I've had him in all parts, so what can I do about that inside the...
I just leave him on just do the porch and not have many inside, or if you have them inside, have them in extremely porous soil. So you'll allow them to dry out before you water them the next time.
Porous soil. So what do? Put rocks at the bottom, or how do you?
You can mix it up a number of different ways. If you ask any nursery or green area in a store, say I need the most porous soil possible, they'll point it out to you. Or you can write to mastergardener@briart.org, and we'll send you several formulas that we have.
Okay, thanks for your call.
Thanks.
And before our break, one more. Emailer, this is Rob. how to get rid of asparagus fern and keep them from spreading. Also, how to keep squirrels off my avocado tree. My baby avocados on the ground are being attacked.
I don't know. The asparagus fern sounds like, you know, elbow grease and determination. That's been what's worked in my yard.
What do they look like?
Oh,
they look like asparagus.
Yeah, well, they're a little lacy looking thing, and they'll have little red berries on them when they're mature. They have teeny tiny white flowers. They're very wispy looking.
They're tough to pull out of the ground, like a real
tough root system.
Root system.
And then they have little rhizomes, which you have to dig up.
Yeah, how do you get rid of those things?
I mean, the
mechanical method's the only way I know, unless you're going to solarize the ground.
Or unless you're going to hit it with an herbicide. But
well,
then
see,
you have to be
careful. We try to avoid that kind of thing, right? You could solarize the ground if there's nothing else there. Otherwise, well, I guess if you're going to try to dig them up, nothing else is going to be there anyway. Start over.
Yeah, if you solarize the ground, you'll cook them, you know, and then they won't come back
either. How long do you need? I left my plastic down for 6 months. How long should somebody? This is the perfect
minimum
time.
2 months.
So
minimum
now is the time months. To solarize, yeah. really, right
this
now.
This is the time right now. Because a lot of people aren't going to want to grow the vegetables that they would grow or some of the other flowers because it's going to be too much water and too much heat.
You'll kill the nematodes too while you're at it.
You'll kill the nematodes, you'll make your whole place much better.
Okay. This is Topical Currents at your service. We'll take a quick break and be back with more. And it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman has the day off. And we're visiting with Terry Goldsmith. She's the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. And Dr. John Pipoli. He's an urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent with the University of Florida and Broward County. Once again, Terry, could you give out contact methods?
Sure. Pretty much everybody's got a smartphone these days. The best way to reach us with any question or to send us a cell phone photo with your comments or questions is mastergardener@broward.org. And just send us, if it's a pest you want identified, just get a good picture of it for us and maybe a background shot showing where the plant, what plant it is and where it is. Whether it's maybe you think it's whitefly, but you're not sure. Whether it's advice about what kind of fertilizers to use and how to feed plants, or these home remedies we were talking about, where you can have a poison-free landscape without having it run over by every pest known to a South Florida resident. Mastergardener@broward.org. There's nothing about landscaping, water conservation, all the Florida-friendly principles that we follow, there's nine of them involving mulching. All those kinds of questions, you can get those answers from us at mastergardener@broward.org.
Well, here's a topic we haven't touched on yet concerning butterfly gardening. The plants that attract females for egg laying work well, too well, because the leaves are quickly eaten and the plants become sticks and are not able to return to full lives. How do we maintain the plants and enjoy them?
I have to tell you, this question comes up a lot because people will say, I want a butterfly garden. We give them our plant list, and they call me back and saying, there's caterpillars eating my butterfly garden.
Doesn't that make butterflies?
That's how it works. That's part of the birds and the bees and the butterflies, I guess. But, it's a healthy mix of nectaring and larval plants. And the milkweed, which the native milkweed I use in my backyard, grows back very quickly. So the key is to have enough of them. And
exactly.
you'll outnumber the larvae because they make quick work out of it. Then they put their chrysalis on a bush nearby, and then the milkweed just starts growing right back. So just have some extras.
What's the main butterfly we get? Are they monarchs? Or?
Well, the zebra longwing probably is our main butterfly, right? That's the state butterfly.
That's the
butterfly.
Most frequent one, yeah.
But we have so many. I have to tell you, since I landscaped my Florida-friendly yard with our nine principles, I must get at least 15, 20 varieties alone. I don't need to watch nature TV anymore. So you can attract all kinds of those. And by the way, once again, mastergardener@broward.org, we can tell you what plants make up a healthy
butterfly. And the website has the nine landscape principles.
Correct.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
Okay.
It's great stuff.
And Bob in Cooper City. Hey, Bob.
Hi, how you doing, Joe? I'm calling for Terry and Dr. John. I wanted to jump in, and I know you've gone over a few things about controlling squirrels and some of the pests that get into our fruit trees, and I wanted to give you my own experience and add one other method that I've used. A few years back when the iguanas were thick, and I had a tamarind tree in the backyard. Tamarind tree was a straight up and down tree with a beautiful conical trunk, and the iguanas were getting up in there. They ate the leaves, they ate the fruit, they basically ate everything, and the tree was starting to look like a stick. And I got the idea looking at the tree one day. I went to the pet store and I bought a conical collar, like you put on a dog to keep it from scratching its ears.
The Elizabethan collar.
Yeah, the collar of shame.
That's the one. And the dogs find it very shameful. The tree found it extremely helpful. I put one around the tree trunk, up about 4 or 5 foot off the ground.
What a great idea!
It's just like the bucket.
Yeah, it's like the bucket, but it's already on the market. I even thought about trying to put together a product like that to stop iguanas, because the next morning I got up and I'm looking out the back window and the iguana had crawled up the side of the tree and he was stuck up inside the cone and he was looking around totally puzzled. Iguanas don't jump, so he couldn't get around the cone and he couldn't get up in the tree, and my tree came back within about 3 months like incredibly beautiful.
So does it fan out at the top or is it at the bottom?
Well, you could put the cone on. It would be upside down.
So right.
Like a skirt.
Yeah, exactly.
And gotcha.
Now, that's not going to work on squirrels because squirrels usually enter the trees from up above. And just a quick message about squirrels, because I have a beautiful mango tree in my backyard, the delicious mangoes. The first year I moved in, the squirrels pretty much destroyed the crop. I got so mad. We had so many squirrels in our neighborhood. I went to the store and I bought one of those traps, those friendly traps that trap the squirrel. And I put it up on top of the fence, which the squirrels used as I-95 to go around the yard. And I began catching squirrels, but I called animal control to find out what to do with the squirrels after I caught them. I was thinking I'll take them and release them somewhere out in the park somewhere. Well, animal control said, well, you can't release the squirrels anywhere unless you get a letter from the property owners allowing you to release a squirrel. I said, well, what do I do with the squirrels? And the guy said, euthanize them. And I couldn't believe it. I said, really? This is you're telling me to kill the squirrel? I really didn't want to kill the squirrels. But I did some research, and squirrels, and I, between all of us here and everybody that's listening, I do have a squirrel relocation program, and have managed to get a lot of squirrels away from the neighborhood. But they produce 2 babies twice a year. So you can see that geometrically squirrels produce. I mean, they're just...
Okay, Bob, incredible. We're getting away from gardening. We've got a lot of callers. So thanks
nice
for your call.
To you.
Okay, thank you. And we move to Jay in Miami. Hi. Jay, you're up.
Oh, hi. I have a solution for a squirrel solution without killing them. It's I have 2 large mango trees, and I have plenty squirrels, and I put up aki tree, and the squirrels don't even come near the mangoes anymore. They much prefer the aki. And both, you know, aki tree, you can trim it to whatever size you want to keep it at. It's a beautiful tree, but the squirrels absolutely prefer the aki over the mangoes. They don't touch them, even if the mangoes fall on the ground. And they stay there for 2 days, the squirrels still don't bother with them.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
And next it's Emil in Miramar. Hi.
Hi, how you doing, Joe?
Good.
I'm trying to grow some herbs in a little garden I put out front. And the only problem I have is with my basil. They get a lot of little holes in the leaves. What is it, and what can I do about it?
Emil, we really have a terrible connection. Your problem is you have holes in your basil leaves. Is that right?
That's correct, yep.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the same fungal kind of thing going on again, and I think the first remedy is to try to wash the leaves off a little bit. The second thing is cut down on your watering and don't water until it starts to look like it's going to wilt, because you won't have so much humidity around to make it easy for fungi to attack.
What about neem?
Neem is fine.
I use neem a lot for fungicides.
No, you could even try a little soap. Neem is from a neem tree. It's an oil you can buy.
N-E-M-E?
N-E-E-M.
It's pretty widely available, believe it or not. You just probably haven't looked for it before, but you can even get it at the big box stores. And it's a pretty universal problem solver for things like aphids.
And how do you apply it?
Spray bottle.
A little spray. It's very easy. It kills a lot of things. Some pests and fungi and a number of things.
And a question from my email from Mike He says, is there such a thing as Everglades tomato, a tomato that's adapted to our environment? If so, where can I get them?
I know there is such a thing, but is it really from Florida, John, the Everglades tomato?
I don't think so. I think it's, they just call it that. It's a very small tomato. It's
about, very tasty.
Yeah, it's a half the size of a plum tomato, and they are really prolific. You can get them at most garden stores. Have the seeds of them. They're very small seeds. They grow up. They're small.
And they crawl along the ground, right?
They crawl along the ground, and
they'll grow during the summer.
Yes, and they're about the size of the tip of your small finger.
They're tasty, though.
Wonderful for salads.
Very tasty.
Great taste. Really easy. You can't go wrong.
Hmm. What about those things you see on TV, like infomercials, with the upside-down tomatoes?
They work.
They work, yeah.
But, you know, they're so much work.
That you could hang them on in your patio.
No, you can do that. A lot of people do that and have really good success. It's just a cost-benefit thing. You know, if you have limited amount of time to do your gardening, if you're a busy person on the weekend, doing the Everglades would be 10 times easier than the other, because you have to have apparatus, water going to it, make sure the water isn't stagnant. You know,
well, the upside down tomato garden is also really good for people who don't have a garden. You know,
right.
You're going to put on a balcony or something like that. That's where you don't have space. That's what.
What is
good
the
for.
Best way to reasonably garden in some of our condos that have they're high up and they're also getting a lot of salt and sun?
Well, for the sun, you can get the black cloth if they'll let you put a little screen to cut down on the intensity of the light. If they won't let you do that, then you have another kind of a problem to block some of it. As far as salt is concerned, if you can catch some rainwater and use that, it's much better.
Well, wind is the other issue. It depends on what floor you're on, I
guess.
But a lot of times you can't even grow a cactus on some of these high rises. So, you know, it's just not a place where you're going to cultivate vegetables.
It's Topical Currents at your service. Let's take a short break and be back. And we return. It is today's Topical Currents at your service edition. We're talking about gardening with Dr. John Pipoli and also Terry Goldsmith. And also, you can get a lot of your information at the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. You can put those in your search engine and get all the information there. Let's talk about landscape a little bit and watering and trying to conserve water.
Yeah, the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program at the University of Florida is a massive program statewide that's funded actually by the Non-Point Source Pollution Department of the Florida Department of Environmental Protection. So the
Quite
first,
a mouthful.
Yeah. So the first goal, I'm sorry, the first goal is, of course, to conserve water. The second is to water efficiently. So we ask everyone that they calibrate their sprinklers. You know, number one, don't mix rotors and sprays, you know, and we have some handouts, some nice Adobe Acrobat files we can send you, tell you exactly how to do that in the manual in plain English. The next thing is to reduce the amount of fertilizer you use. Because if you put the right plant in the right place, it will not need an overabundant amount of water, and it will not need a lot of fertilizing once it's established. And that's the big thing.
Well, I think the key to the Florida-friendly landscaping principles is they're simple. It's no more than you know now. It's just that it's the right information, and it'll protect your investment in your landscaping, because it'll show you how to do it correctly, what to put where, and how to save money in the process of it. And at the end of the day, when you step back about 90 days later during the rainy season, right now is a perfect time to plant these things. You can step back and start to see the cultivation of your own biodiversity on your landscape, whether it's your front yard or your backyard. More butterflies, more birds, more beauty, more flowers. And all you have to do is follow these Florida-friendly landscaping principles, and you'll be armed and dangerous, and you won't have to worry about your lawn costing you, you know, lots of money every year. It's a great way to save money and to get the beautiful success you're hoping for. So we can send that to you, or you can email us at mastergardener@broward.org, or you can go to broward.org/parks, and we've got a PDF you can download right there. Florida Friendly Landscaping.
Back to the phones. Felix Del Rey, hi.
Hi, Joseph. Sorry about earlier when I got disconnected. I have a couple questions. I'm a longtime resident here, about 40 years, and never had problems with citrus trees until the last decade or so. And now I can't seem to grow a proper citrus tree to save my life.
Well, It's because the world's different than it was even 10 years ago. So the bottom line with citrus, except for some of the kiwi limes, is plant on a 12-year tree. Try to keep it as much a shrub as you can so it's easy to manage. And no matter what you do, you're going to get citrus greening and you're going to get citrus canker and you'll probably also get leaf miners.
What's greening?
It's a bacterial disease that comes and it hampers the leaves and eventually it affects the fruit and renders the tree useless. So the people that have lived with this the longest are the Brazilians, and they've just become accustomed to doing rotations. So put your tree in, 3+4 maybe years, you'll start bearing, and when you start to get to 8, then you have to start planning for its replacement, and that's just the way life is now.
But John, just because there's canker or greening on the fruit doesn't mean it's inedible. It just means it's unattractive.
Well, but it gets to the point where the fruit's so hard on one side that there's really no juice in it, and then people don't like it.
Because I've got a key lime tree that has had this for several years, and I still, but I'm getting less and less production.
Yeah.
My biggest, most important question is, we recently moved into a home about 2 years ago we're on Lake Ida. And I planted two citrus trees, and they've been in the ground almost 2 years. And I think they look worse than when I planted them, and I don't think they've gotten any bigger. I don't know if it's a soil issue or if it's, I use the neem oil you were talking about earlier because there's been pests on them. We get a lot of those little water bugs, which I don't think really eat anything, but they seem to collect on them. And I didn't know if that was maybe affecting the growth. And
are they in the full sun?
Not full. They are in like the southwest corner of our property, and there are some other trees like in the neighbor's property that might give it some shading, but they're not 100% sun. And someone did say that to me. Is that a big problem?
I know sun's a big factor. If you go by those successful orchards, what do you see? You see trees out there with no competition for the sunlight. But other than that, John, what would you suggest?
The other main thing is look around and see if there are Lakeview jasmine shrubs around or if there are wild limes planted around, because they're the carriers of the Wanlong Bing, otherwise known as citrus greening. And just having those in the neighborhood will decrease the life of your citrus, because it's a little insect, the psyllid, that jumps from one plant to another and drinks the sap, and as it pierces it brings the contaminant. So that's the problem.
Okay.
And so I would look, and if you can smell the flowers at night of the jasmines, then you know you're going to have an extra challenge ahead of you.
How long did you say you've had these trees?
They've been in the ground for just right at 2 years now.
You know what, John? What about the root binding business?
Oh, that's right.
You know, if you haven't had them that long and they're not growing, they're like stunted, it's entirely possible that when you took them out of the pot, the roots were already bound. And when you do that, you got to cut them with garden shears. You can actually take it out of the ground now and still do it. Or what's it?
The other thing you can do is you can make some cuts.
Right.
With a saw from the stem to 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock, 12 o'clock and 6 o'clock, to make sure that you don't have girdling roots. And the other thing is, make sure that the top of the root is at the surface of the ground.
Good point.
If you've buried it too deeply,
it
will stunt it 30%.
Yep. I personally did that myself. 80%
of the trees. 80% of the trees planted by everyday homeowners are planted too deeply, and it really stunts them a lot.
So should I try to dig them up and
absolutely
trim the roots?
You can't hurt them. You can't make it any worse.
No, you're certainly right about that. One other quick question I had, because I know you're on a time basis. Living on the lake, and I lived less than a quarter mile from where I live now, but it was not on the water. I've had a big problem with this property with all kinds of insects, and I'm assuming it's to do with the water, and I try not to use pesticides. I try to use like the natural neem oils, things like that, but I find myself having to spray my trees and bushes constantly, because not constantly but about every 3 or 4 months, because the leaves are all chewed up all over the place. That's just because we're on the water, or maybe not the case?
It may not be that so much. It may be that people plant the same species repeatedly, even if they're native species. If you have 200 of them, you have a sink, and then the pest that goes after that plant will come in the area because there's so much of it. If there's only one of them, they won't detect it. So,
well, that could be it. My biggest thing I've been trying to grow is firebush, which you know grows like crazy. But I planted about 40 of them.
Okay, we have to
try and get a little. Okay.
All right. Thank you for your call. And we go to Craig in Miami. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Hey. How you doing? There's a pause there. I wasn't sure if you'd pick my call. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a quick question. One, actually two, but one I think you answered regarding a Meyer's lemon tree. I planted it, and it doesn't seem to have grown an inch, but it's not dying. It's really green. It's broadening, but I'm wondering maybe I buried it too deep, and if so, I think you said to dig it up and maybe break up the root ball and then replant it a little
just,
higher.
Just pick it up so that the very top of what's called the root flare is at the grade. So we have some really excellent illustrations of that. If you email mastergardener@broward.org, they'll send you the little teeny flyer that has all the directions. It'll be easy.
And pictures, too. It's very helpful.
Okay, but my main question was actually regarding I'm putting in a hedge, and I wanted to know there's two that I really like. Podocarpus, I know, is a real slow grower, but the one that seems to be really prevalent down here, and I'm in Miami in the Rhodes area, is Clusia. I wondered if Clusia would be your recommendation for about a 60-foot-long fence line that's partially shaded and partially full sun exposure.
Well, that might do okay. That's Clusia fluminensis. It's actually a Brazilian species. We only recently figured it out now, the three of us in the world that work on that genus. I think no matter what you do, consider planting your hedges in blocks because, you know, every month we have a new pest or disease. So don't put all your eggs in one basket and create a sink that's going to attract any pests that we may not know of yet or that will come tomorrow.
It's a long monoculture.
Okay, so I pronounced it wrong. Clusia.
Clusia, yes, it's Clusia.
It's beautiful big leaves. I really like it. Does it get big enough to be a hedge, though? I'm looking for something to get to be about 10 feet.
Well, they have the smaller leaf, the one which the right name is Clusia fluminensis, and there's an erroneous trade name called Clusia gutifera. And then the really big leaves is Clusia rosea.
What could he mix it up with, though, so that it's not
like I think he should mix it up with something like pigeonberry that has nice white fruits. That'll be different. Or you could mix it up with some hollies that have red berries.
Oh, that's nice.
And then you would have white fruits about as half the size of your fist mixed up with red berries, and it would look really nice.
So pigeonberry, hollies, maybe among.
Sure.
Kind of diversify, and then what of the three clusias, which one would produce the fastest growing hedge? Because I need to create some height pretty quickly. And is there a fertilizer maybe?
You don't want to overdo that. Clusia rosea is the biggest of the plants, but it doesn't grow really fast. None of the clusias are really fast, but you want that because they're stronger in winds. The faster a plant grows, the more susceptible it is to wind damage.
And any fertilizer?
And anything. That's
anything?
It. No, the fertilizer, you want to just take it easy on that stuff because we have too much fertilizer in our system now, and that's why our water is contaminated.
Okay. Well, I use all organic stuff, but I don't know if that matters. Okay.
All right. Thanks for
the help. Appreciate it.
Terry Goldsmith, Dr. John Pipley, we didn't discuss mulching. What should people do with their landscaping plans for mulching?
Mulching is really important, and I made an interesting discovery, John, this last month, last couple of months. I started using pine bark instead of the shredded stuff. And I got to tell you, it's saving money once again using the Florida-friendly landscaping. If you use pine bark in areas that are not high traffic areas, you will find that it lasts at least 50% longer than the shredded stuff. And of course, when we recommend the shredded mulch, we recommend the eucalyptus, not cypress, because not rubber, because the eucalyptus has in it some agents, chemical agents in it that discourage the germination of weeds for a period of time, and it'll last a while. And what do we say? Is it like 3 to 4 inches?
3 to 4 inches, and the other thing you can also do with the pine bark is put pine needles in it because they break down quickly.
Well, we certainly want to thank you. The hour has certainly flown by. Topical Currents at your service. We want to thank Dr. John Pipley. He's the Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent with the University of Florida and Broward County. Also, thanks to Terry Goldsmith, the President of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. Thank you both very much.
Thanks. We had a blast.
And that wraps up today's edition. It was produced by Richard Ives, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. As always, we have free audio downloads of our program at WLRN.org and links, discussion, and photos at the Topical Currents Facebook page. And tomorrow's Topical Currents is with Columbia University's psychiatry chairman, Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman. He tells the story of how psychiatry evolved from a fraudulent practice by cranks to a specialty which helps millions of patients. Lieberman is also the chief psychiatrist at the Columbia University Medical Center. This is Joseph Cooper. Stay with us. Up next, it's Here and Now from NPR News.